seekers. Welcome to tonight's program. Two things I want to mention tonight. First, I think Charlie Rangel is going to call in tonight around 10 o'clock Eastern Time. That's about 55 minutes. I don't know. He may or may not. Secondly, tomorrow, or I should say Saturday, is the anniversary, is that the right word, of the U.S. attack and occupation of Iraq. Our attack on Iraq was no different, as far as I'm concerned, than Hitler's attack on Poland in 1939. Absolutely no difference whatsoever. And as we have done for the past 7 years, this will be the eighth time, at the bottom of this hour, in about half an hour, we will play for you the sounds of shock and awe. The bombing of Baghdad as it occurred and was recorded that night 8 years ago. A night, of course, that involved the government of the United States in a continuing act of war crimes that has not stopped. We are still committing war crimes. This time it is being conducted by the administration, or they are being conducted by the administration of Barack Obama. For 8 years, it was the Bush crime family. Now it is the Obama administration. And also the third hour, what I have planned, if it doesn't change, is a complete rocket attack on, verbal rocket attack on the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization and Rush Limbaugh. So stick around for that. If you want. You don't have to. The earlier this evening, not that long ago, the United Nations Security Council voted 10-0 with 2 abstentions. 5 abstentions, really. 10-0 to attack Libya. The resolution calls for the use of, quote, all necessary measures, end quote, including the use of a no-fly zone to protect civilians and rebel forces in Libya from forces loyal to Muammar Gaddafi. The passing of this measure is expected to lead to UN-backed military strikes in Libya within hours. And leading those strikes, of course, will be the U.S. and the U.K. And who else? You think the French might get in? Get into it? You think the French will decide to participate in this? Who else? No, not Israel. Israel would not do that. It's pretty stunning, but not too different from the resolution that was passed by the UN that authorized force during the slaughter in Yugoslavia during the Clinton administration. The one that Wesley Clark, I believe he was the Supreme Allied Commander at that time. And, of course, it raises the issue of attacking, once again, the military of another country, and what is going to happen now. I don't know. I'm not sure how to process that information, that we are going to get involved in yet another military action. Do I think Gaddafi is a nutcase? Yeah, no more than Dick Cheney. no more than the rest of these crazy people that have been in charge of the United States for so many years, seems endlessly. Is Gaddafi murdering his own people? Sure he is. Of course he is. He's been in power for 40 years, though. Why, you know, why all of a sudden now? We is it because too many things have accumulated that Libya has been responsible for? Or is it yet again a lust for and insistence upon owning the oil that is in Libya? Libya has, I think, the second largest deposits of oil in Africa. Is that correct? One of the sub-Saharan African states, I think, is number one. I don't know the name of it. But I'm just not sure how to think about this. You know, my gut reaction is no, not again. I realize what is happening in Libya. An attempt to overthrow a dictator is resulting in the slaughter of the people trying to overthrow him. Gaddafi has been useful in different ways to the United States and some of our allies over the past four decades. I won't say that he has been some sort of an ally where it concerns U.S. foreign policy in that region, but he has not, for example, as far as we know, I mean, this could just be empty BS talk, but as far as we know, he has not subsidized terror organizations. Is that right? I don't think so. Libya, you see, is less of a political entity than it is a collection of tribal authoritarians who defer to Gaddafi. But if at the risk of sounding kind of weird and kind of like the French and the British and the Italians and the Spanish and the Dutch and all the various colonial powers, Libya is not really a country. It is a decentralized confederation of tribes. Would that be fair? For those of you who are listening who have much more insight and information as to the structure of Libya, send me a quick email if this is if what I'm saying is that far off base. I think it's correct, though. So the strike that is, I would say, no later than tomorrow afternoon or evening U.S. time, this assault will begin. Now, the Arab League, I believe, is on board with this. Certainly, UN is on board with it. It was a unanimous vote, even with the five abstentions. I can certainly understand why the Russians, with their activities in Chechnya, and the Chinese, with their activities in among the Uyghur people and in Tibet, would not want to see the UN attack. On the other hand, I guess China understands that a pro-Western dictator in Libya, unlike Gaddafi, would probably open up the oil spigots a little bit more. And, of course, China certainly needs that, don't they? We'll be back. Stay with us. Right.
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Well, that sounded nice. 21 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Okay, where were we before we were so rudely interrupted by the United Nations deciding it's time to invade Libya? We'll ask you that question a little bit later in the program.
Ow.
By the way, this hour is sponsored by Terra Dactyl. From RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. She writes, Happy St. Patty's Day to all truth seekers. Remember that every time someone joins the Class 4 resistance, John Boner cries. Make him cry by visiting RepublicanDirtyTricks.com and joining the Republican Dirty Tricks Facebook page. From Tara Dactyl, RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. She's the sponsor of this hour. Thank you, Tara. Japanese officials are now warning a massive blackout, or blackouts plural, could hit Tokyo. If the Japanese officials are warning, then it's probably a fait accompli. It's probably for certain going to happen. No offense against Japanese officials per se, just against government officials in general. Tokyo's 35 million residents. Is that right? 35 million people in Tokyo? No. 35? Couldn't be. Tokyo's millions and millions of residents are preparing for massive blackouts after the government there warned that freezing conditions were straining the country's electricity grid. The Minister of Economy, Trade, and Industry told a news conference earlier today that if demand hit the same level for power that it reached yesterday, if it reaches the same level tonight, vast sections of the capital would lose power. Minister Banri Kaida said, there is a possibility of unpredictable large-scale blackout. In order to make sure to avoid the unexpected, we'd like to ask industry users to save electricity and ordinary people to save electricity in the evening and at night, end quote. What a polite way to do it. I mean, isn't that polite? So the situation in Japan, when one starts to think it couldn't get any worse, it gets worse. With the earthquake and the tidal wave, the tsunami, and the multiple reactor meltdown as a result of the tsunami, and the freezing winter weather, and now the possibility of loss of power through the electric grid, I would assume in the whole country. What else can happen? Well, Cheney could show up there to, with his vampiric cadre and say, well, we're coming over here to, we're going to help. My company's Halliburton and KBR. Do you want to hear something funny? Put your ear down here on my chest. Isn't that funny? You don't hear lump dump, lump dump, lump dump. You hear that could be the last nail in the coffin of Japan if Dick Cheney were to show up. Don't you think? Oh, my God. The man who is responsible for Not quite as much death and destruction as Henry Kissinger, but a good second place. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, how long does that run, Kathy? 6 minutes? Seven? It is a long segment when we come back. Long if you're listening on radio. If you lived through it, it was eternal until it killed you. And, of course, as one of the first viceroys, American viceroys in Iraq said after the bombing, we don't do Iraq body counts. So we have no idea how many people were killed in shock and awe. But we'll give you a chance to listen to it for the eighth time when we come back.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour, and this hour is sponsored by Pterodactyl. Terra has the website RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. Check it out. And she wishes a happy St. Patrick's Day to all truth seekers. Go to RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. Thank you, Terra. All right, we're going to play this for you. You may not want to listen to it. If you don't, I completely understand. It runs 6 or 7 minutes, so this might be a good time to go do something else. This is the way it was. March 19th, 2003, when Dick Cheney decided to commit mass murder in order to get his hands on Iraqi oil. to go to commercial.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So a few minutes there of the soundtrack of Dick Cheney and George W. Bush's great adventure into Iraq. Email here from Jen, subject calm and peace. Jen writes, the only way to win is with peace. No violent rhetoric. Talk about all the evil things that are being done, but support peace, Mike, please. Yesterday you seemed to suggest that people should get their guns to fight tyranny. Violence is not cool. Be angry, but don't suggest that people should become violent. Peace isn't the only destination. Peace is also the way to peace. Believe me, we are winning. And when we approach and dynamics change, then your show can be about good things happening. But please don't advocate violence now, as the peaceful revolution is starting. No need, and it is very counterproductive. Very counterproductive. Jen. I don't know how to answer that for fear that, you know, whatever I would say would sound a little snarky on my point, or my part. But I am missing, somehow, Jen, it's blowing right by me, that a peaceful revolution is starting. I don't see that. I may be looking the wrong place, and I will grant you that, you know, I probably live in a pretty closed universe here. I don't mean I stay in the studio all the time, but I'm talking about where I travel and what I see and what I listen to and what I experience. Would that you were right, and perhaps from a certain perspective that you can see and I can't, peace is at hand. A peaceful revolution is starting. And as far as advocating violence, I agree that I came real close to the limit of not advocating violence and crossing over into it. I understand my own rhetoric, and I know what I mean, but you're right. Probably people listening to it do not understand it. What I'm advocating now is resistance, and that resistance has got to take a form other than, and I hate to use this because, as an example, because I believe in online petitions, but it's got to take a form other than online petitions. Civil disobedience, well, nonviolent is resistance. And, I think we have tried for so long to use peaceful means to approach the corporatists who now own the United States, and they own it because, to some degree, of the peacefulness of us. I'm sorry to say that. I really am, but I don't know how else to put it. Peace and passivity are one and the same when it comes to the political realm. They are. They just are. And to my way of seeing the world, it hasn't been too effective. But again, I may be seeing things with eyes that just haven't been opened yet. And I accept that, Jen. Little news flash for you here. Bob Kincaid of Head On Radio Network, The Horn Online, is going to be in D.C. with the rest of the convocation of people who show up. And he is going to make every effort to stream the entire event on his Ustream page. His Ustream channel is under Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On with Bob Kincaid. So, in an email, Bob says it won't be polished. It won't be, you know, brilliantly produced, but he hopes to provide some level of live documentation. So at some point on Saturday when this begins, and I would imagine it'll be around early afternoon, I'm not sure when those of us who are speaking are supposed to begin, probably around noon, 11, 10, I'm not sure. After the speakers, then will be a march, and then the action in front of the White House. And Bob Kincaid has indicated that he will be there Ustreaming. And again, his channel on Ustream is Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On with Bob Kincaid. Okay, that's good news. I'm sure the people who listen to both Bob's program and mine will tune into this Ustreaming. Reg writes, if we were a nation with a conscience, the soundtrack you just played would be played on every radio and television station every year on the anniversary of the attack against Iraq, and sent out on the audio systems of every school in the nation. Of course, we are not a nation with a conscience. From Reg over at TVNewsLies.org. What else we got before the break? Oh, yeah, Bill from Jersey. Has a quotation here from Confucius. Before you embark on a journey of revenge, dig two graves. We'll be back after the break and possibly with Congressman Charlie Rangel. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Jay Farner here.
Hey, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Seven past the hour. Just a couple of more comments here in the form of emails from people regarding Overman. And then we'll move on because God knows we don't want to talk about the silencing of voices of dissent in this country. I can remember a couple of months ago, Kathy, or several weeks ago, when it became clear that Comcast was going to go through with their purchase of NBC, the controlling interest of NBC, pending approval by the whores in Congress, the number of which has increased dramatically since this last election. And I said at the time, one of the first targets of Comcast is going to be Keith Olbermann. When I heard this today, I just about lost it because there are so few liberal voices left. There are so few voices left to tell the truth. And Obermann's happened to be one of those voices. Now, yeah, I'm putting things in the past tense. I listened to Rachel during the break making her her statement about what happened today. And I also listened to the person who sat in Obermann's chair tonight. Oddly, they left up all the graphics that had his picture in the opening shots. And I also listened to Brian Williams on NBC tonight read it as a 10-second news item. So, Obermann's return to MSNBC is certainly nothing I will ever be privy to before the fact. I'm not on that level. And plus, I don't work for that company. But I have a gut feeling, and I hope I'm wrong, that his days at MSNBC are over. I also have a gut feeling that if that is the case, then Lawrence O'Donnell and Rachel Maddow will soon follow. I hope I'm wrong on that, too. A couple of quick emails, we're going to move on. From David in St. Paul, with the Supreme Court ruling of Citizens United, MSNBC is a corporation that was granted, quote, individual rights, end quote. They are now able to donate unlimited sums of money into our so-called democratic political process. However, Keith Obermann is suspended for donating to his choice of political candidates. Corporations now have more rights than individuals who work for them. Yes, David, they do. More political rights, because they've always had more legal rights. From JC. I'm surprised Keith lasted this long. He was sincerely against war and petitioned for peace, a complete contrast to the views of the parent company owner, GE, a major defense contractor, estimated as much as $500 million earned in weapons production just to Iraq every year. Also, a GE chairman was deeply involved in the 2000 Florida vote suppression. Remember the slogan, GE, we bring good things to death. From another David, quote, I just read an article critical of MSNBC on Huffington Post. They said that, I don't know if he means Obermann, David here, or just MSNBC in general, for being mean and vicious in attacks on Bush and Cheney. Well, mean and vicious are the kind of adjectives for two evil men guilty of torture, mass murder, war crimes, inflicting pain and suffering to thousands of human beings. What is wrong with speaking the truth? Another article criticized MSNBC for pressing Michelle Bachmann to answer questions or explain her comments. The villains who had the nerve to ask Republicans for answers were Chris Matthews and Keith Obermann. Obermann was especially mean because he laughed at Bachmann's evasive responses to the questions. Oh, yeah, election night. Remember, that was when Chris Matthews said, are you hypnotized? David, I know you're asking the question rhetorically, what is wrong with speaking the truth? You do not speak the truth, except in rare instances, on any kind of network media in this country. You simply don't do it. Any kind of corporate-owned media, you're allowed a certain amount of truth, but it can't be the wrong kind of truth, which would be political truth. Those days are gone. 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 Last thing about this tonight, go to boldprogressives.org, where the petition is. Again, not that it makes that much difference, because MSNBC doesn't care what its viewers like or don't like. And the reason for that is I can't think of any radio station, radio network, television station, or television network that responds to cries of outrage from their listeners/viewers, ever. I have seen very popular people on radio stations disappear. That's the way it used to be. You would be flushed down a memory hole. Poof. One day you're there with the top rated show. The next day you're gone. Someone's sitting in your chair. Someone's in your time slot. And nobody is allowed to say a word. And then I've had it happen to me. But I've seen it happen to other people. And regardless of the number of names on a petition, like I said, when Air America got rid of me, it's some little rinky-dink network like Air America that was essentially bankrupt. That's one of the reasons they fired me, is because I demanded to be paid the back wages they owed me. Even with 27,000 names on this petition that went to MSN or to Air America, it might as well have been two names. It doesn't matter. However, I think as a symbolic gesture of protest, it would probably be a good, which is the reason I went to progressives or boldprogressives.org and signed the petition. But as far as signing a petition having an effect, zero, zip, nada. Corporate America, especially where it concerns media, could not care less what you think. They simply do not care. Look what happened to Dan Rather. Look what happened to, who was the guy on MSNBC that had a liberal talk show, was married to that girl, Donahue, Phil Donahue. Look what happened to him. Look what happened to Bill Maher on ABC. So this is not new stuff. It's just getting tighter and tighter and tighter. Right-wing demagogues that appear all over media now, radio and television, can do and say anything they want to do and say because they service corporate America. They literally service corporate America, and they're paid a lot of money to do that service, to spread the propaganda. Just like in the last 24 hours that Barack Obama's trip to India was going to cost $200 million a day and going to involve half the Navy. I guess you saw that. It was on every single right-wing cable television and radio program in America, and it's all a lie. But that is what they are paid to do, goddammit. That is exactly what they are paid to do. The idea of balanced media, forget it. The idea of a liberal drift or liberal slant or progressive or truth on television or radio with one or two very, very few and far between exceptions, forget it. Forget about it. But I still suggest you sign Keith Olbermann's petition. Bad stuff. All right, we'll be back after this break. And in the bottom of this hour, we are going to play podcast trivia. So stick around. Let's see if you can win one. I'm Mike Malloy.
Called you so many times today, and I guess it's all true what your girlfriend say. You don't ever want to see me again, and your brother.
Progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Don't go. 21 past the hour. By the way, this is Guy Fawkes Day. Did you know that? It's November 5th. Gosh, it seems like yesterday, but it was 1605. Guy Fawkes and fellow conspirators attempted to blow up the English Parliament and the King and failed. They were beheaded. this is also the day in 1990. An Egyptian-born gunman assassinated Meir Kahane, the U.S. native who founded the Militant Jewish Defense League, among other things. Also, in 1990, George Herbert Walker Bush, in 1990, the U.S. Supreme Court let stand an order requiring the U.S. Army to permit homosexuals to reenlist. Really? In 2004, Saskatchewan became the seventh Canadian province to allow same-sex couples to marry. The seventh, 6 years ago. And it's also the birthday of socialist Eugene Debs. excuse me. Got a couple of his quotes here. He said, "The most heroic word in all languages is revolution." He also said, "When great changes occur in history, when great principles are involved, as a rule, the majority is wrong." You gotta love it. Irish Dave sent it to me. Mike, happy Guy Fawkes Day. Well, here you go. Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Guy Fawkes, 'twas his intent to blow up the King and Parliament. 60 barrels of powder below to prove old England's overthrow. By God's providence, he was catched with a dark lantern and burning match. Hello, boys, let the bells ring. Hello, boys, God save the King. Oh, my. All right. Catherine? All right, we're going to play podcast trivia. Oh, that's right. We're going to play podcast trivia at the end or after this next break. What else we got here? Oh, yeah. You know, George Bush has got a book out. I don't know who wrote it for him, but he says he considered ordering a U.S. military strike against Syria at Israel's request in 2007. Bush denied charges that arose at the time that he had given a green light for Israel to attack the installation. Israel eventually destroyed the facility, which Syria denied was aimed at developing a nuclear weapons capability. In his memoir, Decision Points, to hit bookstores this Tuesday, Bush says shortly after he received an intelligence report about a, quote, suspicious, well-hidden facility in the eastern desert of Syria, end quote, he spoke by phone with then-Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. George, Mr. Olmert told Bush, I'm asking you to bomb that compound. According to the book, a copy of which was obtained by Reuters news agency, Mr. Bush said he discussed options with his national security team. A bombing mission was considered, quote, but bombing a sovereign country with no warning or announced justification would create severe blowback, end quote, he writes. Jesus Christ! A covert raid was discussed, but it was considered too risky to slip a team in and out of Syria undetected. Bush received an intelligence assessment from then-CIA Director Mike Hayden, who reported that analysts had high confidence the plant housed a nuclear reactor, but low confidence of a Syrian nuclear weapons program. Mr. Bush says he told Olmert, I cannot justify an attack on a sovereign nation unless my intelligence agency stand up and say it's a weapons program. Mr. Bush then ordered the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq in 2003 based on intelligence that said Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction. Bush has already indicted himself. I I long for the day when the guacamoron is traveling someplace overseas and he is nabbed by the authorities of some country and immediately shipped to The Hague. That will happen when China becomes the dominant economic and military force. As it stands right now, they're only number two, but they're closing fast. It'd be interesting to see if Bush is still alive when that day occurs, how quickly it will take a country that has heavy investment from China to nab this war criminal and send him off to trial. We'll be right back. Once again for podcast trivia here on the Malloy Program. Oh my God. Where you can win a 1-year subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads absolutely free. Retail value of, are you ready? $59.60. Ow! All you have to do is get the right answer to our trivia question. And we have with us on the air Sarah from Pittsboro, North Carolina. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Mike.
Are you ready to take a shot at this?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be.
All right. Well, that's about as ready as anyone can be. I got you. Okay. Now, this is a long one, so you got to pay very close attention. All right?
Okay.
Okay. George Raisin Brain Bush's memoirs will be released next week. Complete with crayons. Oh, just kidding. What leaked excerpt from the book might suggest that a foreign nation charge him with war crimes? Would it be...
What excerpt?
What excerpt from the book that's already out there might signal a foreign nation to charge him with war crimes? Is it A, he admitted he ordered Colin Powell to lie to the UN about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. B, Bunny Pants admitted he authorized illegal wiretapping of innocent U.S. citizens. C, the guacamoron admitted he had authorized the use of white phosphorus weapons to chemically burn the flesh of innocent citizens in Iraq and Afghanistan. D, the chimp-in-chief knowingly let Osama bin Laden escape Afghanistan right after the 9/11 attacks. And D, Dim Sun admitted he authorized the CIA to waterboard, that means torture, suspected al-Qaeda detainees.
Okay, I'm a little off because I never heard any music.
You don't hear the music?
Oh, no, I guess I don't hear the music.
Okay. What's your answer?
All right, my answer is the one about the wiretapping. I mean, no, the waterboarding.
The waterboarding. E. All right. All right, Sarah.
That was great.
You win.
Hey.
Although all of them are correct, he did all of that, but he didn't admit to any of the other illegal actions in his book the way he admitted to torture. So you do win. Hold on, Sarah. Let me put you on hold. Kathy will get the pertinent information and congratulations. I've been in Pittsboro, North Carolina. All right. Let's do some phone calls. And John from Oregon. FerryWoodland.com, John. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Not very well.
Yeah, I'm with you there, brother. I'll tell you, what is it you say? I can't. Have I told you lately how much I hate these people?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But, you know, the reason I'm calling is that my ire is not just at MSNBC and the people that acquired them. It's the fact that in this last election, there were so many people who were very sort of blasé about whether to vote or not, whether the Democrats had done enough or not, and da-da-da-da-da, all this stuff, and they did something stupid, like either voting for a Republican or not voting at all, not realizing that that may have been the last chance that they had to prevent the sort of thing that happened to Keith Olbermann from happening. I am just so angry at them for that.
Well, I understand what you're saying. But on the other hand, John, I also understand, and I'm sure you do too, that the frustration that people feel, how many times have so many of us trooped to the polls to vote for a Democrat only to find out that we're voting on electronic voting machines? I don't know if you all have them in Oregon, but we have them here. And like I said on the air the other night, when Kathy and I walked into our precinct and noticed that we were going to be in a church and noticed that we were going to be voting on Diebold, in a church, to me, there's something weird about that. I'm not a believer, but the fact that a church would give over its gymnasium to people whose sole purpose is to steal elections, to make people think they're voting. Given all that, I can understand how people have gotten to the point where they say, look, the game is too rigged. What, you know, why should I fool myself into believing I'm really voting for the person I consider to be the best candidate? So I get your point, but I also get the point of people who've had it. So,
well, here in Oregon, we vote by mail, but our ballots are counted by an electronic device. And who knows how that is monitored?
Well, the fact that you vote by mail, I mean, anyone who wants to can take, after they fill in their ballot, can take it, you know, take it to the basement or to the nearest Kinko's and photocopy it, and you've got a record. We don't have any of that here. We don't even get a receipt, nothing. They hand us a little yellow credit card. Looks like a credit card. It's just like buying something. You know what I'm saying? You push your credit card in, your little yellow voter card, and bingo, up on the screen pops the ballot. And then you push, and it goes bingo, bingo, bingo. And then when you're all done, it shows you the complete a record of what you voted for and said, is this how you want to vote? And then you click yes, and it's gone.
You'll never see it again.
No, you never see it again. You don't know. And then that evening, you hear the vote totals from the Department of Elections here in Georgia, and you find out that Republicans won every single race except one. Down around Albany, Georgia, representative who's represented that area for, I think, 10 terms, a guy named Sanford Bishop, a black man, which is very unusual because it's South Georgia. And here's this guy who is a African-American who got reelected again, slim margin, but he still got reelected. So it makes you think that whoever runs the Diebold machines and reprograms them must have missed the ones from Albany or let him win, so it looked like it wasn't a complete sweep. But I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying about the voting, but I also understand the frustration because I feel it.
Yeah, and we're really going to need to watch out for control over the internet and any control over public access to the internet, because that's the next thing.
Something
that's harder to acquire by a corporation. And I fear that our last great source of information is going to be taken away from us. This is enough of a blow.
Well, that's one of the objectives of this new Congress coming in, all these Republicans, the corporations who use the Internet. Have been so pissed off. I mean, there are a lot of sites where you have to subscribe. Washington Post is one. New York Times is one. Of course, if you have a subscription to the New York Times newspaper, then you get a free online subscription. But Wall Street Journal, there are a lot of places where you have to subscribe in order to enter their site. But the idea that entire blocks of the Internet are off limits unless you pay money. Yeah, net neutrality has been the amazing thing about this tool for organizing and communication, and that's why the right wing has to shut it down.
Yep.
The potential for organizing, the potential for sharing information, for getting the truth out. I've gotten emails, John, over the past 3 or 4 months from 7 or 8 liberal sites, Consortium News, Truth Out, Crooks and Liars, Media Matters. I can just go right down the list that all depend on two things: net neutrality, A, but B, or this is that was B, A is donations. And every one of them is just struggling. And for a somebody who is working class like I am, or somebody who's unemployed or whatever, how in the hell? I used to contribute on a regular basis $100 every time I got asked by Truth Out. But this is back in the day when I was working for Air America and I could afford to do that. It's just astonishing how voices of dissent are being squeezed out of existence until it's going to be all right wing all the time. And I don't know how to stop it anymore. I really don't.
Either. And, you know, years ago, I worked for UCLA as an auditorium manager. And I was privy to certain conversations on the part of the administration talking about what to do about the kids that were demonstrating against the war in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And the attitude of the administration came around to, well, these kids are a bunch of ingrates. They don't understand the realities of the world, or something to that extent. And it gradually went to the fact that we need to make them appreciate their education more, while forgetting the fact that the reason they're protesting was because they had gotten an education.
Right.
And gradually UCLA went from being a bastion of research and scholarship to one in which everything had to be a profit center.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to do research, it had to lead to a product that could be sold instead of just simple curiosity.
Right.
And people forgot the fact that the reason we had a Silicon Valley is because first we had a Stanford. But
yeah.
The curious people that tinkered this thing.
Yeah. Well, John, there's some music. We got to take a break here. Reagan was part of the reason that decline occurred, for sure. John, thanks for checking in. Okay, have a good weekend, you and Bridget.
Good to hear from you, Mike.
All right,
hang in there, buddy.
Take care. We'll be right back. What was that? 10 before the hour. And just remember, the Rally for Sanity in the park, was it last weekend? The weekend before? I don't know. When Jon Stewart had the balls to suggest that there was equivalency between Fox and MSNBC, and specifically used the Oberman program as proof. Mr. Stewart, you've lost a viewer, I swear to God. And that's a shame, because a lot of the stuff The Daily Show did was pretty cool. But Jon Stewart is not a stupid man, and to make that kind of pitch in front of 200,000 relatively young people who were either there to be entertained or maybe to get a little bit of truth, and Stewart does that. Well, good for you, buddy. You got yours, right? I know. Donald is in Shelbyville, Indiana. Hello, Donald.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Michelle Bachmann, she is in a trance because she cannot believe how stupid America is when Fox News told her, just get up there and say, you know, we're going to do what? We're going to cut the budget, we're going to cut the spending, and we're going to take your Medicare. And, you know, Fox News and all big corporations told her, all you got to do is just stand there, and you're going to become a senator. She was dumbfounded. She was in a trance. She could not believe that America has gotten that stupid. The entire campaign, nobody in America on the right has said how they're going to cut. You know,
sure.
I've seen all these advertisements on death panels, on how they're going to tax you to death on the insurance. You know, does anybody remember the 90s when trauma centers were shutting down all across America?
Mm-hmm.
You know, does anybody remember that?
Oh, you know, yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
I mean, something is wrong. I mean, you know, I'm a Christian. I know you're not a Christian, but you know what? You got to look at this. Read the first part of Revelation where it says that God has something against the church. Let me tell you something. The churches are fake, because let me tell you something. I am a Christian. I love God, but I hate the churches. When they say that the homosexuals should die, for one, they're no better than the guy down there in Florida, the stupid idiot that wants to burn the Koran and say that's not what God wants. God is about free choice. If you want to be a homosexual, that is your business. And God says that we're to love you. God died for everybody.
Well, that's right, Donald. Oh, oops. Oh, no. Donald, I just lost you. Oh, well, I was just getting good. I wonder if God has something to do with that. Rand Paul. Following his big win, this is at Raw Story, in Tuesday's midterm election, Senator-elect Rand Paul explained his economic philosophy in about 30 seconds during a CNN interview, claiming he wants to shield the wealthiest Americans from paying higher taxes in the name of protecting the working class. This is what he said. This is what he told Wolf Blitzer. I would say the Democrats must be in favor of a second American depression, because if you raise taxes to that consequence, that's what will happen in this country. What if they just raise taxes on the riches, those making more than $250,000 a year, Blitzer asked. Paul answered, well, the thing is, we're all interconnected. There are no rich, there are no middle class, there are no poor. You remember a few years ago when they tried to tax the yachts? That didn't work. You know who lost their jobs? People making the boats. The guys making $50,000 or $60,000 a year lost their jobs. We all either work for rich people or we sell stuff to rich people. So just punishing rich people is as bad for the economy as punishing anyone. Let's not punish anyone. Let's keep taxes low and let's cut spending. Rand Paul lives in a place like Kentucky, and he doesn't see the poverty. As Michael in Roswell says, those must be some powerfully large blinders he's wearing. Well, there you have it, truth seekers. There are no poor people. That's an illusion. There are no rich people except the ones that desperately need our help. We've got to help the rich people, because goddammit, when they go to buy their yachts, if they can't buy their yachts, think of the tens and tens of people thrown out of business because the rich can't buy their yachts. This is insane. I mean, this is insane. I ought to spend the next hour stripping the flesh off of Rand Paul, but I've already got somebody in mind. The new governor of the great state of Florida. The one whose company. What was it? HCA. His name's Rick Scott. Columbia HCA, at one time the biggest hospital chain in the country, and they stole so much money from Medicare that they were fine. The company was fine. The company was fine. $1.7 billion. And Rick Scott had to resign as CEO. And now this filthy dog is the governor-elect of Florida. Well, stick around because I'm not going to spare this guy anything. Screw this, especially on a night when Keith Olbermann gets suspended indefinitely without pay for making a political contribution. Son of a bitch. All right, I'll be right back. Stay with me if you dare. I'm Mike Malloy. Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say Bush crime family. Stop the music. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. You know, a lot of talk about all the new Republican governors as a result of Tuesday's election. Florida is a good example. Florida has a thief, a liar, a con artist, and someone who likes to defraud the federal government as its new CEO. The guy's name is Rick Scott. Rick Scott, like a lot of these newly elected Republican governors, says he wants to run Florida like a business. I wonder if he wants to run it the way he ran Columbia HCA. Hospital Corporation of America is what HCA stands for. Our young Mr. Scott spent a decade buying up hospitals to create the country's largest healthcare chain, Columbia HCA. According to New York Times, former colleagues described Mr. Scott as a no-nonsense leader, fixated on costs, willing to cut programs, fire employees, strip it down to its bare bones. He presents himself, Rick Scott does, as a turnaround expert. You know, he goes into something that's failing and makes it a big success. He told supporters the other night in his victory speech, quote, "I won't rest until we make Florida a model for the country in job creation and education," end quote. Well, he wants to destroy public education, and the way he's going to create jobs is by firing thousands upon thousands of state workers. Plus, behind, he had a campaign slogan, "Let's get to work." That was his campaign slogan, "Let's get to work." He said that he had a plan of 7 steps to create 700,000 jobs in 7 years. Ooh, all the sevens. My head is spinning. Oh, my goodness. Among his proposals are plans to privatize more prisons. Oh, yes. That's a big business in Florida. Give vouchers to parents for schools. Vouchers to parents for schools, which means to gut and destroy public education. And give vouchers to Medicaid recipients for health insurance. Medicaid recipients. Those are poor people who cannot afford. So he's going to give them vouchers and get them off of Medicaid. And what are they going to do with their vouchers? Here's a voucher for $100. Now go get yourself some insurance. But I can't. Oh, well, too bad. You can keep the voucher. And he also wants to reduce what businesses have to pay for the workers who are injured or killed on their job sites. This is the way this rancid, bald-headed son of a bitch is going to revitalize Florida. Mm-hmm. He said yesterday, or Wednesday, that to light the burden of government on every Florida family, there's a burden of government on every Florida family. There is indeed. Every Florida family can feel the weight of the burden of government. Oh, yes! Stop a Florida family and ask them if they feel the burden of government. But in order to lighten the burden of government, Mr. Scott pledged to shrink the state payroll by thousands of jobs and to bring tax cuts, hefty tax cuts, for the wealthy. Here we go again. You see, just go for it, Rick. Destroy the Sunshine State. Just beat it into dust, like the rest of these governors are going to do. Bum, 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 bum. Democrats are predicting a return to the dark ages in Florida. Republicans are thrilled. The state Senate President Mike Haridopoulos said, "It's a real opportunity for us. Not since the 1860s, Haridopoulos said, has the state had such a conservative concentration of power. And as a result, a lot of legislation is going to pass." Specifically, he said the state would probably revisit a Senate bill vetoed by Governor Charlie Crist that would have established merit-based pay for teachers. Oh, that's great. You know, this merit-based pay for teachers thing is one of the biggest scams in the country. Do you all understand that? The idea being that because so many kids are failing in school, it must be the teachers! So let's have merit-based pay. And how are we going to decide if the kids are succeeding? Oh, well, we'll give them tests. But what about the big cheating scandals that usually result from these horrific, hideous tests, like in the state of Georgia right now? Oh, well, that's just because we got some rotten apples. No, it's not. No, it's not. Merit-based pay for teachers means that the teachers are then responsible for the dysfunctional children that come into their classrooms, children that have no breakfast because the family has been unemployed for 2 years. They have not had proper nutrition at all. Maybe they haven't been to a dentist for a while, have a toothache. Maybe the parents are divorced. Usually they are. The parents are divorced. The kids are living in a trailer or a furnished apartment with roaches running around. When they watch television, they see this consumer-driven society, this product-oriented society, all the stuff that these kids will never have. It further depresses them because, after all, they're little kids in America, and that means you got to have stuff. They have no health care. Their parent or parents probably beat them out of the frustration that the parents are going through. They may have some learning disabilities, ADD, or what's the other one, Kathy? Attention deficit disorder. What's the other one? Hyperactivity disorder. They have no money when they come to class for the school lunch, and they certainly don't bring a lunch. They may not get any supper when they get home. There's no little after-school things going on in their lives. They don't go to ballet classes. They don't take piano lessons. They're not in Cub Scouts. Why? Because there's no money for this stuff. So dump it all on the teacher. The kid comes to class. He or she can no more learn than he or she can fly. But let's blame the teacher for that. Because a teacher, you see, in a public school carefully selects the pupils he or she wants to teach and makes sure that he or she will only be teaching kids who are open to learning, right? Isn't that the way it goes? No, it's not. But old Rick Scott, boy, he's got a plan. Yeah, give vouchers to parents for schools and get rid of that, or reinstate that merit pay thing, and let's do all kinds of stuff. We're going to turn Florida around. Well, there's one thing about Rick Scott. He's a thief, a crook, a liar, and he commits fraud. In 1987, he helped found the Columbia Hospital Corporation with two business partners. This merged with Hospital Corporation of America in 1989 to form Columbia HCA. It eventually became the largest private for-profit healthcare company in the U.S. He was forced to resign as the chief executive of Columbia HCA in 1997 amid a scandal over the company's business and Medicare billing practices. The company ultimately admitted to 14 felonies and agreed to pay the federal government $1.7 billion in fines. And Mr. Scott later became a venture capitalist and entered politics this year when he announced his intention to run for governor of Florida. $1.7 billion in fines for fraud. Fraud. Ripping off the government. Ripping off Medicare. Stealing. Sticking his bony-ass hands in other people's pockets and taking it. It's mine! And now, he's going to run Florida like a business.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by. And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they picked.
Afraid? Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. You know, reading this puff piece, this stroke piece in the New York Times written by Damian Cave about Rick Scott, Florida's new chief executive. I'm reading the article earlier today, and it's about 500, 600 word article. And this guy, Damian Cave at the New York Times, is doing for Rick Scott what Monica Lewinsky did for Bill Clinton. And it's rather embarrassing to watch. In a 500-word piece on Rick Scott, there is one sentence about the $1.7 billion in fines that Columbia HCA paid for defrauding Medicare and other federal programs. One sentence. And the way Damian Cave writes it is like this. He may have been famous outside his country for $1.7 billion in fines that Columbia HCA paid for defrauding Medicare and other federal programs. There it is. That's it. Next sentence. But inside his company, he was known for setting up a report card system for individual hospitals and their administrators, tracking everything from patient outcomes to revenue and growth in admissions. And the sentence right before the brief mention of $1.7 billion in fines, the sentence right before it. His former colleagues say he was particularly successful in two areas, negotiating deals and imposing more financial discipline into the healthcare system. Financial discipline? Is that what theft and fraud is called now? It's called financial discipline? Aha, well... Jesus, God, I'm going to take my rifle, walk into the nearest bank, hold it up, walk out with 80 grand and say, hey, no, don't arrest me. That's financial discipline. I'm just trying to make you bank employees work better. some freak named Nermes or Nemes or something who sold Columbia HCA, a series of hospitals during Mr. Scott's thieving tenure there, said, quote, "It was the classic management case. He gave them responsibilities. He gave them authority. And if they didn't perform, he got rid of them." It's sort of the direct opposite of government. That's what Mr. Nemzoff. Hey, Nemzoff, give me another hospital. Sure, Rick Scott, you need to defraud the federal government of even more money. Okay, here. And then this Damien Cave, writing for the New York Times, says, "And that may be Mr. Scott's biggest challenge. He is a proud outsider who has never served an elected or appointed office. He's also never served in prison. And you got to wonder why, right? Well, the corporation committed the crime, not Mr. Scott. No, it's never the CEO. Of course, he had to resign after making hundreds of millions of dollars. You know how much he spent on the race? What did he spend on? He spent $73 million of his own money to become governor of Florida. $73 million. You got to wonder. No, let me change the pronoun. I have to wonder how much of that money came from people he screwed over. How much of that came from Medicare fraudulent billing? How much of that came from Rick Scott stealing anything he felt like stealing? Here, let me take this. And all right, now you guys over at that hospital, I want some results here. You people only managed to defraud the Medicare of $2 million last year. I want that up to $5 million. Do you hear? Yes, sir. We're trying to run efficient hospital. Then by God, do it. That's efficiency to Mr. Rick Scott. Huh? Despite his having, this is a Damien Cave again writing at the Times. Despite his having named a transition team of conservative state lawmakers, a lot of people, critics and some supporters, ask whether he can be trusted to make cuts without dire consequences. For instance, his seven-step plan calls for laying off 5% of the state workforce, rolling back state and local spending to 2004 levels, and here's a good one, adding drug screening as a requirement for welfare recipients. Yes, goddammit! Do that! Drug screening! How about criminal screening for people who want to run for governor of Florida? Now wait a minute. Mike Malloy. What are you talking about? We can't have welfare recipients smoking weed? Jesus Christ, what's wrong with you? Drug screening as a requirement for welfare recipients. Oh, he defeated Alex Sink, a Democrat, by only a single percentage point after spending his $73 million that he obviously stole from any place he could get his filthy hands on it. And 62% of voters said they still had reservations about him, according to exit polls. Really? Well, I'll tell you what, you can take your reservations and use them to make dinner, because Rick Scott, he is going to stick it into the state of Florida and break it off at the hilt. And as far as children, people that go to school, young people, the elderly, get ready. Rick Scott is about to do you the way he did the federal government. Don't you love these Republicans? Won't you come?
Are you paying?
Before the hour. We were young together. So Florida CEO Rick Scott is somebody who should be serving a huge amount of time in a federal penitentiary someplace, along with other people who have defrauded the federal government. And again, who was it mentioned the other day? If Rick Scott would have done this in China, the Chinese premier would have sent somebody over, three or four people, who would have taken him out behind the nearest hospital that Rick Scott ran and put a bullet in the back of his head and then sold his organs. But in this country, after you are fined $1.7 billion, your company is anyway, after you've been forced to resign, after all of that, then you take the money you stole, spend tens of millions of it, $73 million, to become the CEO of a poor, sad state like Florida. Poor, sad state? Yeah, that's right. If you don't know why I call it a poor, sad state, read any of Carl Hyacin's books, and you'll know. So there he is. Now, Jeb Bush, former Governor Jeb Bush, had to weigh in on this thief. Because Jeb Bush is a thief, a con artist, and a liar, too. Former Governor Jeb Bush said that Rick Scott, quote, will have willing partners in the legislature to do bigger things, end quote. Oh, my goodness. Mr. Bush said that Mr. Scott's business expertise, his business expertise would be particularly useful. Jeb Bush said, quote, Medicaid reform, continued education reform, and business climate improvements are all places where I expect our new governor's experience will be helpful, end quote. Jeb Bush, I'll be a son of a bitch. Medicaid reform. Really? How about this, Jeb? Just let Rick Scott steal all the money. That'll reform it, right? That'll get those poor, drug-tested welfare recipients off Medicaid. Let Rick Scott steal it. He seems to be very good at that. Stealing other people's money. People who come into his filthy chain of hospitals sick, distraught, freaked out, fighting insurance companies. And there's Rick Scott right there ready to relieve them of their wallet. My God. But old Rick Scott, oh, he going to be a good governor. Yes, he is. He's going to be a good Republican governor. He's going to take care of things. He was forced to resign as CEO of Columbia HCA in 1997 amid a scandal. Scandal? Over the company's business and Medicare billing practices. Billing practices? I have a problem with my practice where it concerns making sure my 30 caliber rifle is sighted incorrectly. Usually what I will do is go to a range and I will have the instructor there to help me make sure that my scope and everything is sighted incorrectly. So when I go to shoot a when I go to shoot a deer, I'll be able to shoot him where I want to. Well, I decided to change. Instead of going into the shooting range, I now go into the bank for my target practice. And you know what? I've never been able to get a single shot off because every time I walk in, everybody just starts handing me money. He was forced to resign as CEO of Columbia HCA in 1997 due to a scandal over the company's business and Medicare billing practices. But Rick didn't do anything wrong. Nah. He was forced to resign by an impetuous board that said, all right, Rick, you've stolen enough. Bye. The company ultimately admitted to 14 felonies. A company. How does a company talk? See, a company is usually a filing in some lawyer's office. So you pull open the filing cabinet. Oh, yeah, stuff is still filed on papers. And the papers leap out of the file and say,
I'm
And then the attorney sits there and says, my client, the sheath of papers that represents Columbia HA, just pled guilty to 14 felonies, and we agree to pay the federal government $1.7 billion. And then if you're an enterprising investigative reporter like this dork that works at New York Times, Damian Cave, you turn to the sheath of papers and you say, are you really pleading guilty? And the sheath of papers, which is the company, will say, oh, okay. And the attorney will say, what that means is, well, he's pleading guilty, but only as a way of ending, which has been a very trying time for Columbia HCA. We want to get on with the business of of helping people get well again. You know, we forced our CEO, Rick Scott, to resign. Why doesn't the enterprising reporter ask Rick Scott about that? Hey, Rick, how much did you stick in your own pocket? You know what kind of answer you get? Oh. Okay. Republicans. Now, you think Rick Scott's attitudes toward public money... Isn't that funny? He runs a company that steals as much as they can steal of public money, tax money, Medicare money. Where do you think Medicare money comes from? Huh? Where do you think it goes? Certainly not from Rick Scott. But he and his company relieve millions and millions of dollars. And then he gets elected governor of Florida. Pretty good gig, huh? What do you suppose he's going to do as governor of Florida? Ah, somebody better lock up the state treasury. Oh, they better keep that away. Keep that away from old Rick. Watch out now. But make sure, Rick, you get those welfare recipients drug tested, right? Huh? How about drug testing former CEOs who take over state legislatures? How about that? Ah, you want to do that one? No? Why not? Oh, it's beneath you. Well, of course it's beneath you. Would you submit, Rick Scott? I mean, you're a former CEO. You're a big guy, right? You're now the governor of Florida. Why should you submit to a drug test? Jesus Christ, what are you suggesting, Mike Malloy, that I do drugs? But let's get the welfare recipients. Everybody likes to kick their asses, right, Rick? Everybody likes to stomp on them, right, Rick? How many of those people did just screw over when they were Medicaid recipients? Ah, Jesus, Rick, you're just one hell of a man. You and Carly Fiorina and Meg Whitman, boy, you guys really prove. Do good in business, and then you can become governor. Well, some of you. You go, Rick. Only in America, only we could produce these kind of swine, this kind of scum, this kind of rapacious capitalist pig. Pig who cheats and lies and steals and then gets his ass elected governor. How? By spending $73 million. Where'd you get the money, Rick? Come on, Rick, where'd you get the money? By pulling up your bootstraps, right? God have mercy. Well, I'll tell you, if you combined the kind of Republican entrepreneurial ship that Rick Scott so obviously represents with the willingness and ability to commit massive fraud, theft, lies, cheating, deceit. Why, my goodness, even you can become... Oh, you also have to have a huge amount of money in reserve that you can spend to buy the governor. $73 million to become governor. It's not about the money, right, Rick? I mean, what's the governorship pay in Florida? A couple hundred grand? Lunch money, right? Lunch money! You probably gouge that much out of one or two patients over the years, right, Rick? T- typical Republican, typical American capitalist, buy up all kinds of hospitals, consolidate everything, fire people, and then steal every goddamn thing you can get your hands on. Who's going to stop you, right?
Making plans to meet him somewhere along. But love is no longer there. The woman of his heart no longer cares. It's best to call it quits and go your separate way. Playing that cheating game only leads to hurt and pain. Cause each other unhappy days. Cheating in the next room. Making plans to be with them soon. Talking softly on the telephone.
Before the hour, you know, I've got some real problems with the sacrosanct press in this country because they simply don't do their jobs, and it's the only enterprise, the only profession given constitutional protection from the very beginning. The framers knew that as long as this little nascent democracy that they started all those years ago, this little democratic republic that they started all those years ago, I think they understood, even though all of them were fairly young, with the exception of Franklin, but they understood the base nature of human beings that buried beneath the veneer of civilization for most of us is this rapacious, thieving, lying, sneaking, stealing, reptilian rat bastard, and those are just the Republicans, who, given a chance, will steal their own mother's false teeth if they know they can cash it in and buy a gram of crack. Well, Rick Scott fits that mold perfectly, the new Florida governor. And the press has an obligation to expose this guy. But what we have instead in the New York Times by Damian Cave is a puff piece, a stroke job, a kiss right on Rick Scott's shiny pate by the writer, Damian Cave. The opening sentence in the Times. Many of the newly elected Republican governors have said they want to run their state like a business, but few have been as brash and bold in corporate life or with their economic campaign proposals as Rick Scott, Florida's new chief executive. It isn't until you get to about the 30th paragraph that you read, he may have been famous outside his company for $1.7 billion in fines that Columbia HSA paid for defrauding Medicare and other federal programs. It doesn't even say in the article that Rick Scott was forced to resign as CEO. Doesn't even say it. So the complicity among and between so-called journalists like Damian Cave and an absolute corporate thug, a plunderer, somebody who sees capitalism really is what it is, a way to steal, gouge, lie, cheat, take advantage of, fire, remove people from their livelihoods, do everything you possibly can to stuff your own pockets with as much cash as you can. Rick Scott personifies that attitude. So the people of Florida apparently not being a very bright group at all, they also elected Mario Rubio. Rubio, oh my God. Well, if you've ever spent any time in Florida as I have, you know that it's populated by a bunch of folks who just recently learned to walk upright. It's really, really sad. There are dumbass states in this union, but 90% of Florida is comprised of real trolls. They haven't a clue. A 10-foot tidal wave sweeping across the state would probably be a good start to get things, you know, cleaned out a little bit. It's a real cesspool of graft, fraud, crime, lie, and most of her crimes are financial crimes. Stealing, thieving, lying. I think everybody who, you know, Florida's where you go when there's no place left to go. A lot of people go there to wait to die, but a lot of people go down there to feed on the poor slobs who come from other parts of the country and just can't make it anymore. Oh, let's go to Florida, Harriet. Why, dear? Well, there's no heating bills. So there they all sit, clustered together, waiting for a predator, a vulture like Rick Scott, to come along and spend $73 million in his campaign to be governor. With the help of a press corps, all the way up to the New York Times, with some crack journalist like Damian Cave, who waits 30 paragraphs to inform his readers that Rick Scott had to, Rick Scott's company, his company, the papers filed in the lawyer's office. That Rick Scott's company was fined $1.7 billion for Medicare fraud. Medicare fraud. I wonder how many old bastards down in Florida voted for this guy. I wonder how many of those old bastards that voted for this guy had their health costs padded by this freak over the years, by this freak's company or him, over the years, and don't even realize it. But the company was fined. Let's put the company in jail. Where's that sheaf of papers? Mr. Lawyer, give us that company. Okay, just a second here. Put handcuffs on that sheaf of paper. We can't. There's no arms or hands or anything. Well, calm it down. Stick it here. Put it in this file folder. That'll do it. That'll take care of Columbia HCA. Oh, by the way, anybody around here seen the CEO? Well, he resigned, and we understand he's going to run for governor of Florida. Run for governor of Florida? A lying, cheating, sneaking crook like him? Oh, well, he has an Ice Cube's chance in hell or Florida. Yeah, he'll never make it. Rick Scott is just one example. We could sit here for the next 17 years and do a new example every single night of these lying, stinking Republicans. But there will be ample opportunity coming, trust me, because the Republicans were handed a mandate. America has decided they love Rick Scott and the Republicans. Amen and amen. I'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend, Truth Seekers. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. I'm going straight.